Hi everyone, this is Kina Wolfenstein and you're listening to the Complex Trauma Recovery Podcast. I have been pretty busy, so I haven't been putting out a ton of episodes recently, but I have a very exciting interview for today. Before I introduce my guest, just my few show notes. My link tree will be pasted in the podcast description. If you click on that, you will find the links for all of the other resources that I offer. I've been putting a ton of time and energy recently into my Patreon, which at this point is pretty much dedicated to therapy. I think non-therapists could still enjoy some of the content, but the content is geared towards therapists who are wanting to learn more about how to work with complex trauma, how to use more experiential bottom-up techniques. So if you're interested in supporting my work and gaining access to that content, that is in my link tree. So are the links for the workshops that I have to offer, as well as a number of other resources. My practice website is there. I do have a workshop coming up Sunday, March 10th, all about attachment and attachment trauma and healing from attachment trauma. So the details to register for that are also in my link tree. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for your support. And today I am interviewing the one and only Deb Dana, which I am super excited about. Was so excited to hear back from her when she agreed to come on the podcast because, as many of you probably know, Deb Dana has been a huge influence and a huge inspiration of mine since really the very beginning of my work. In fact, some of the very earliest podcast episodes that I put out in 2020, I was referencing the work of Deb Dana. So she is a hugely influential author and clinician who has contributed to the research on polyvagal theory. And she has written books really about how to utilize polyvagal theory in therapy, how to apply our understanding of the autonomic nervous system in therapy and the healing of trauma. So you guys have heard me talk about the autonomic nervous system ladder. You've heard me talk about glimmers. You've heard me talk about how our nervous system state creates stories. All of that I got from Deb Dana. So the interview with her was wonderful. I really love hearing her way of describing polyvagal theory and the work that she does. So I know you guys are going to enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. Okay, Deb Dana, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet you and talk with you as well.
So I would love to hear, just kind of in your words to start off, what is polyvagal theory? And then maybe a little bit about what drew you to, you know, this particular type of work.
Yeah. So I think the easiest way for me to think about what polyvagal theory is that it's a theory about the workings of the autonomic nervous system, right? Which is so important for us to understand because the nervous system is the heart of our lived experience. It's where everything begins. So polyvagal theory sort of helps us understand how we are human and gives us a blueprint for working with the nervous system. So we're not just going wherever it takes us, but we can really become an active operator of our nervous system. So I think that's the joy of it, both for just navigating through everyday life and for navigating the more traumatic, more extraordinary moments that happen for all of us. So yeah, and I've always been a neuroscience nerd. You know, I got my master's in social work, became a licensed clinical social worker, and just loved working with the brain. It was so cool, right? Got to go into a histology lab with a group of other clinicians and actually hold human brains and
wow.
Brains being sectioned. See, that's the response. You go, wow, right? Some people go, ugh, but I went, wow. And I just loved understanding because that is what we're doing when we're working in therapy, right? We're helping clients form new neural networks, new pathways in their brain. And I thought, so important for us to understand that. So that was where I started. But then I read Steve's book, his first book. And it was like, oh my God, there's this whole other piece of the puzzle that I don't understand and is, I think, really important somehow for me to understand. So, you know, read his book and started playing around with how do you bring the nervous system into, you know, our direct clinical work? How do we help clients understand? How does it inform what we do? And how does it help clients, you know, navigate life differently? So that's where it started. And I emailed Steve, got in touch with him. I think we actually spoke on the phone back in the days when people did that, right? Mm-hmm. And invited him to come to Maine and do a weekend workshop for my colleagues. And he did. And that's sort of where it all began. He came to Maine, and his wife Sue came with him. She did a piece of she did offered part of the workshop because her brilliance is around oxytocin. She's the one who discovered the role of oxytocin in relationships. So
Oh, wow.
She had her own, you know, dynamic couple, right? You'd like, oh my gosh, brilliant scientists, both of them. So they came, and I told Steve what I was playing around with, and he thought it was really wonderful, you know, so that was sort of the encouragement to keep going. And that's kind of where it all began. So I always tell people, if you, you know, think something's really interesting, reach out, because you never know where it's going to take you, right? You just never know. Because who knew, when I read his book, it said, would you come, you know, do a workshop, that I'd end up here where I am today.
Yeah. Wow. How cool. What a cool origin story.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah. And then can you talk a little more about the work that you did to kind of expand upon it? Like where did you want to, you know, dig deeper and keep exploring with that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, the theory is brilliant, right? And most people, you know, read the theory and think, oh, that's really cool to know. You know, you're a social worker as well. We're always thinking, but how do we do something with it? I want to bring the theory into application, because theory is great, but I'm working with people and I'm working with my own experience as well. So that's where it started for me. It was like, how do I take this brilliant theory and sort of pare it down, not water it down, because I want people to understand how their biology works, but pare it down, make it simpler to understand so that we can use it and clients can engage with it. And my, you know, I drove my colleagues, I too was in a small group practice, and I drove them crazy, I think, because I would come in with ideas and say, try this. And, you know, some of the ideas were like wonderful and they still exist today. They've become a part of the fundamentals that I teach. And others were like, what were you thinking? Right. So
kind of trial and error.
Those went away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it really was the latter that was my sort of moment when I thought, this works. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, and since then, you know, thousands and thousands of people have also, you know, given me that feedback that it works to understand your nervous system on a ladder, that you move rung to rung. So it's this gentle movement. You move down from regulation into one survival, then the other, and then you move back up. And we're always somewhere on that ladder. That's what I think I liked about it. It was gentle. It showed the movement, and we're always somewhere on it. You're never off it. So I brought that to life, and then I started creating, you know, worksheets to have people get to know their nervous system, because to me, the place to start is in that befriending process. Yeah. You know, you ask people, what do you know about your autonomic nervous system? And most of them look at you blankly. They have no idea, right? Mm-hmm. Or they'll tell you, oh yeah, it's that fight, flight, rest, digest, because mm-hmm. that's the old way of thinking about the nervous system. That's the, you know, the paired antagonism, one moves and the other goes the other way.
Right.
And Steve's brilliant work brought us into the hierarchy, which I think is so important mm-hmm. for us to understand. So, you know, that's where it started. And then once you create your first worksheet, you're off and running, right?
Because
clients will say, ooh, but help me understand this. There's another one and there's another one. And so it's really, for me, it was client driven. Clients would say, oh, I want to know more about this. You know, oh, I can help you with that. Then I started creating workshops, and my, you know, colleagues would, you know, really give me the feedback in the moment of, I get this, but I couldn't use this with my clients. I could use it with other clients. So we're trying to create a platform that is generalizable. Because everybody has a nervous system, whether I am, you know, the worried well, or whatever we call them nowadays, if we have any of those still, or whether I'm the, you know, the complex trauma survivor, or whether I'm the person who's living in a dangerous world, your nervous system is still responding according to these three organizing principles, which makes it such a lovely connecting.
Right.
Right. We all connect through this experience of nervous system activation. So it bring, and in the world we're living in this moment, I think I love anything that brings us together, because everything is trying to pull us apart. Show us how we are separate. We are not alike. We are at our foundation, at our core, we are connected by the common denominator of the nervous system. And so that's, you know, where I really wanted to be, in places where every nervous system could find its way on a ladder or a worksheet or a graph or whatever it is. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yes, it's so human. I love the ladder. That's probably one of the first places that I start with every client that I work with, because I work exclusively with the complex trauma populations. And so I always usually start with the nervous system ladder and the different charts to kind of help people identify, like, where are my kind of like resting places? Where am I spending most of my time? And being able to start like naming those experiences instead of them just being kind of amorphous, overwhelming,
Yeah.
experiences. So that's been super instrumental in my work. And I love your focus on like how do we really apply this. I read the polyvagal theory in therapy and then polyvagal exercises for safety and connection. And I love that because yeah, it just makes it really like accessible and real to work with.
Yeah. And I do love it. I love that you use the beginning map with all of your clients because, I do the same, or I did the same when I saw clients. It's the first thing I teach in my workshops because I think it helps us move out of that pathologizing place and that, if I'm the client, the shame, blame, the self-criticism place, it's my nervous system doing what it was meant to do to help me survive. So I love that. That's such a great place to start. Yeah.
Then the depathologizing is so huge. I think it brings so much more like self-compassion and being able to like appreciate that our bodies are working to protect us instead of feeling like we're just malfunctioning. And it's such a big shift that can happen just through that understanding.
And hard to remember sometimes, isn't it? Even now. I mean, I've been doing this work for a long, long time. And even now, there are moments when I move into that self-blame, self-shame, self-critical place. And then I think, oh, wait a minute. It's my nervous system. There's a reason for it. Let me be curious about what's happening that my nervous system has taken me to this, this survival strategy. And I think it's that curiosity that we're always looking for, right?
Totally, yes. And I believe you were the first person that I read talk about the theory or the idea that like state creates story. You spoke on that, right? Yeah, could you talk a little bit about that principle?
And again, I think it's a wonderful thing to remember that your nervous system state, gives you access to certain thoughts, feelings, behaviors, beliefs, and keeps you away from others. So whatever state you're in then feeds that information to your brain, where your brain's job is to make a story, to make some sense of what is received from your nervous system. So it's not that the brain creates the story first and then feeds it downward. It comes from the nervous system of the brain. So your state is the platform for your story. So if I'm anchored in that place of regulation, that ventral place, my stories have, possibility, choice, hope, options, passion, purpose, all of those wonderful things. But if I'm in a state of sympathetic fight and flight, I don't have access to those stories, right? The stories are one of being in an unsafe world. I'm surrounded by unsafe people. Those are the stories. And it's not because I've chosen that cognitively. My biology has chosen that for me. And then in that other survival state, the dorsal collapse, hopeless place, right? I have no energy and my stories are about despair, hopeless, give up, can't. Right. And again, if we remember the story emerges from the state, we can look at someone and say, oh, of course that's their story because they're in this state. They can't have a story of hope and movement and let's go accomplish things when they're in a shutdown state. You can't do it. Right. Biologically unable, not unwilling, but
Yes,
biologically
unwilling.
unable. Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. And we
Yeah.
can work with what's happening on that deeper level, right? Because my experience with therapy for a long time before I discovered these deeper modalities was a lot of just trying to like change the way that I thought, like a lot of the cognitive work of like, well, how do I tell myself a different story? And
Right.
so that was really like a great reframing for me of, right, you don't force the story to be different. You work with the state as kind of the root of it.
I mean, I like to think your nervous system and your brain have to get on the same page. And if, we often are taught to override what our nervous system is telling us. We aren't taught to listen. We override, we power through all of those things that somehow we think is the right thing to do. But in the end, your nervous system is going to win, because if you keep overriding, you will get physically or psychologically sick. That is what it's going to do. It's going to take more extreme action to get your attention. So again, in the beginning, I thought, let's listen when it's not being so noisy, right? Yeah. Because it simply wants us to hear the message it needs us to know. So, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that the story curates state, which also means because we have three states, we always have these three stories circulating. Mm-hmm. Right. And we can, you know, the state that we're in is the story we believe to be true. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's this lovely exercise where you listen to that story, but then you imagine your other states and what would be the story there, just to broaden the perspective. Mm-hmm. Because we get stuck in our story.
Yes. Right? Kind of as a zoom out exercise, because yep. when you're in that state, it's almost easy to forget that you ever felt the other states. Exactly. Like you're exactly. like, what did I even feel like when I was safe and grounded? I don't know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Which again is the common human experience. And again, if we remember that, it helps us have some compassion for others, yeah. right? They're behaving in this way because their nervous system has activated this particular state.
Yeah.
Right. Again, we can have compassion. It also, I want to be clear, doesn't mean we're not responsible for the mess we make when we're dysregulated.
Right. Totally.
It just means that I didn't choose it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand it. I can come back to regulation and then clean up the mess. So, but it takes away that, you know, we assign moral meaning all the time to people's mm-hmm. behaviors, motivation, mm-hmm. right? But the nervous system doesn't. It simply enacts a survival response. If we can remember that, we can get out of thinking they are a bad person
yeah.
to thinking yeah. they are a dysregulated human, right?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. So when someone is starting to kind of be able to recognize more, like to understand what state that they're in, what are the next steps in terms of befriending the nervous system? Like, what does it look like to befriend the nervous system clinically?
Well, I think the first is to really understand, what is it like for me in each of the states? That's the basic befriending. What are the thoughts, the feelings, the behaviors, the body experience I have in each? What are the core beliefs that I hold, the stories that are the ones that I, you know, hold when I'm in those states? When I can do that, the next practice is what I call the notice and name practice, which is that I stop frequently and notice, where am I? So where am I on my map? Where am I on my ladder? Name the state. So I bring it into active awareness. Because again, this work is about bringing the implicit experience into explicit awareness, mm-hmm. which, you know, for you is what you're doing all the time. That's therapy. You yes. can't work with it if it's implicit. So we bring it to explicit awareness, notice the name, and then can I turn toward whatever state it is and listen with a bit of curiosity for about 10 to 20 seconds. That's it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to get sucked into the story. You know, for most of my clients, the story was a survival story. And I didn't want them to get sucked in. I just wanted them to hear just the highlights of what the state was telling them mm-hmm. and then come back, right? That's the skill we're creating. We can listen and come back to present, listen and come mm-hmm. back. Because what happens for us is we get pulled into the survival story, the survival strategy, and get stuck there. And that's when we suffer, right? Every human dysregulates all the time.
Yeah.
Right? If you think about your day to day, you think, oh yeah, I've visited fight and flight. I've had anxiety and anger. I've even had some collapse, some, you know, give it up, despair. Mm-hmm. I found my way back to safety and connection. That's the hallmark of resilience. Mm-hmm. And a resilient system is what we're looking for. Not that I don't move out of regulation, but I can find my way back. That's what we're working with our clients on, right? Mm-hmm. To find the way back, because they get stuck in the survival story.
Yes, right. And mobility. We want the mobility between the states, not to just be regulated all the time.
Yeah, regulated all the time. I don't think any, but no human can ever be. Right? don't try for that.
Yeah,
but know that the nervous system, I believe, is built with these pathways that take us to regulation. Every nervous system has a ventral state built in, has a system of regulation and connection and safety built into our biology. Mm-hmm. And it has pathways that can take us there. So our job for ourselves and with our clients is to uncover those pathways and figure out, how do we travel them? And then every time we travel the pathway, we strengthen mm-hmm. that capacity. So we want to repeat that over and over and over. That's really what we're looking to do. So we befriend, then we notice, name, and listen, learn to listen, right?
Yeah.
Because really all the wisdom you need is there. You
Yeah.
just need to learn to listen. And then, you know, when we learn to listen, the next step is, what do we do? Right. What do we do then? And that's where we, you know, we build a number of different resources. Right. And
yeah.
You know, as I'm talking, I also want to be clear, because many people think when you resource, it's because you don't want to be with a trauma. Right. And I really want people to understand that we resource so that we have the ventral anchor so that we can safely be with the trauma. Right. Without the resourcing of ventral, we are sucked into the old survival. We relive. We can't remember. We relive, which is so bad for any of us, and so hard for our trauma survivor clients to relive over and over. So if we can have enough anchoring in ventral, we can be with, we can visit, we can process, we can be informed by all the things that good trauma therapy does. But you can't do it without an anchor in ventral, which is why we spend a lot of time in the beginning. The befriending becomes resourcing, so that I know when I'm feeling pulled out of ventral into my survival story, I have something I can reach for that helps me stay with a toehold in ventral, with enough ventral active, so I can then listen to that story.
Yes.
Right? With the help of a therapist who's going to bring their ventral to be with me as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the power of the therapist's state.
Right, right. Oh, you're touching on so many important points here that I wanted to ask you about. Because I feel like sometimes there's maybe a misunderstanding of somatic therapy or nervous system work, which is that we're just going to be constantly kind of trying to get rid of dysregulated feelings. It's like, oh, if you feel this, you need, you know, hold your face in the ice water and do the breathing and do the, and those somatic techniques can be helpful, right? But yeah, it sounds like you're talking about, it's this real balance between we want those resources, but not to just avoid and get rid of all of the painful feelings, but to be able to process them in a way where we're not just like re-experiencing it and being re-traumatized, right?
Yeah, because the science tells us that when you get pulled into sympathetic fight, flight, or dorsal shutdown collapse, change can't happen. Right? Therapy stops. Change cannot happen. So it's a reliving, re-traumatizing experience. So our job as clinicians is to help clients have enough regulation so that they can then process the trauma, right? Which again, it's having enough safety in the system, right? You have to have that safety in order to process, in order to heal. So yeah, it's important for us to remember that we're not running away from, we're having enough anchoring so we can move toward safely.
Right, right. So you kind of do that resourcing so people cannot be stuck in those dysregulated states, so we can kind of trust ourselves and our own bodies and resiliency that, like, okay, I know how to kind of get back to a safety baseline. And then that creates kind of enough internal safety that then we can sit with like the really hard, intense stuff in a safe way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you preload that, if you build that first, it makes, you know, trauma therapy a safe experience.
Yeah.
Right. Because a client knows, they have an embodied knowing that I have a way, and I have a therapist who will be with me. You know, that's the other piece that, you know, we really want to talk about, is that my regulation is essential for my client's regulation. Right. So if I feel anxious that they're, you know, going to dysregulate, then I'm sending that message to their nervous system, and they probably will dysregulate because I am no longer a safe anchor for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, it's about knowing our nervous system first and having enough, you know, resilience of in ourselves so that I can then accompany my client to those difficult places.
Yes. And that's co-regulation, right? Between the therapist and the client.
Co-regulation. And then again, because we're human, we have moments in our sessions when we lose our anchor in ventral, right? You know, maybe you're in a challenging time in your own personal life, and, you know, you're sitting with a client, and all of a sudden you remember, oh, I need to put this on the grocery list, right? And, you know, you come right back, But through neuroception, if we want to talk about that, neuroception is how the nervous system sends and receives information, and you can't hide, right? And so through neuroception, I just sent a message that I just went away for a minute.
Yeah.
Right? I got distracted. And if you don't name that with your client, their nervous system will register it. And they're probably not going to think Deb's thinking about her grocery list.
Yep.
Right? That's not where their brain's going to go. Their brain is going to make up a story that, you know, I'm too broken. She's bored. She doesn't want to work with me. Something along that line. So we want to be careful because it happens for all of us.
Yep.
Maybe not the grocery list, but something. You get distracted, you get pulled away, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I learned early on, just name it with your client. Say, wow, I just got pulled away for a moment, but I'm back.
Yes.
And clinically, it's interesting because I would then say, did you notice, if we stop for a moment, did you notice that I got pulled away? And sometimes they'll sit and go, oh, that's what that was.
Oh, right. I felt that. Yeah.
Sometimes they'll go, I didn't notice. And I go, well, let me try it again because I want you to, you know, I'll make it bigger. I'll really, you know, so that, because it was in there somewhere, but you want to check the other end of that too and say, do you know, can you feel that I'm back now?
Right.
Because many trauma survivors feel the rupture, but can't trust the repair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so smart. Yes. Yeah. And I learned that the hard way, I guess, because I think I didn't know in the beginning that it was okay to acknowledge that with people. I thought you kind of just had to, you know, keep a professional face or something. And I've noticed that especially people with complex trauma are like so good at detecting that, right? Like their nervous systems are so primed for noticing disconnection and rupture. And so I've had clients, you know, kind of just say to me, I feel like, and I'm grateful for it. I've had clients kind of call me out and go, I don't know. I feel like not really connected to you right now. Or are you having a hard day or something? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't think that was showing at all. I thought I was doing such a good job masking it. So I've really learned it's a chance to model like an open, you know, kind of transparent way of relating to someone and noticing kind of how attachment works between people, right?
It's that interesting different use of self than what we're taught in our clinical trainings.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's an appropriate boundaried and yet transparent use of self, because my nervous system is speaking to theirs. And so I would like to give the context of which it's happening. And sometimes, you know, I would come into the office and it would have been a messy start to my day. And I would sit with a client and say, you know, it was kind of a messy start getting here. Let's just sit for a minute and find our way to regulation together, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to feel it anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Notice it, name it, normalize it. That's what I say. Notice, name, normalize, mm-hmm. you know, and clients would, you know, how many, you've probably had clients too. It was so fun. They would say, oh, I love that you're human too.
Mm-hmm.
I say, yeah, because my nervous system is pretty much just like yours. It's just that I have learned to regulate it in a bit different way. That's all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about how particularly complex trauma affects the nervous system and what kind of changes in like neuroception for people with complex trauma?
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, we create an autonomic profile is what I call it, and our nervous system takes in experience and then acts to keep us safe, and everybody's nervous system does it in a different way. So I like to, you know, tell my clients and tell everybody, we all have a home in ventral. That is, every human has a home in ventral, and we will, that is our goal, to help you find that home and visit it more often. We also all have a home away from home, which is the particular survival strategy that your nervous system uses most often. And complex trauma survivors, you know, just like all the rest of us, nervous system decides, is it safer to be in the fight and flight, anger, anxiety world, where it's, you know, chaotic, mobilized energy flooding the system? Mm-hmm. Or is it safer to go to this disconnect, dorsal shutdown, collapse, disappear place? No energy in the system, right? And that's a nervous system decision, not a brain decision.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we figure out where is our home away from home, and then we begin to work with that. And so helping a complex trauma survivor understand where their home away from home is, and then have some appreciation for the ways it has kept them alive all these years. Mm-hmm. And then to understand that, you know, as we bring in more cues of safety, the nervous system will feel less of a need to dysregulate there. And yet the familiar cues of safety are so potent, right? So it may be like, you know, a piece of something that happened before, right? The story I tell about neuroception, because neuroception, three pathways, it's listening inside your body all the time, right? And for many trauma survivors, the body is not a safe place to be. So we don't get those cues.
Yeah. Right?
And yet, if you talk about nervous system rather than body, you have a better chance of checking in, because for some reason, it's okay. We have lungs, we have a heart, we have a digestive system. Somehow that's sort of different than body. So I used to, you know, I would talk about nervous system, and it was an easier path in for many of my clients. Mm. So we have the inside, we have the environmental pathway, and that one is so activating, right? Because it may be the color of the wall. It may be something you smell. It may be a sound, right? Mm-hmm. And one cue can take you right back into that old trauma experience.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're always looking moment to moment. can we identify concretely what are the cues of danger right now? Right. Mm-hmm. And can we find the cues of safety?
Yeah.
Because they are there, but we miss them.
Right. Right.
So there's that inside, outside, and then the between we talked about is how my nervous system and your nervous system are in a conversation.
Yes.
And the example I use around that is I had a colleague who was a really skilled clinician. And yet, you know, every time we met as a team to talk about cases, I found myself wanting to argue with him. I needed him to be wrong. And I could not figure, because my brain said that's crazy. But my nervous system gave me the fight response, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it took a while, but I sat with another of my colleagues and I said, help me figure this out. It was a certain mannerism he had that was a familiar cue from someone from my past.
Yeah.
Right? But until I brought it into explicit awareness, I couldn't do anything with it. My nervous system said, that's dangerous, go away.
Mm-hmm.
So my home away from home usually is dorsal. In that instance, I kept going to fight.
Have a fight. Right? Yeah.
Either one's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can identify what are the specific cues in this moment, you can begin to shift that safety danger equation.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do. And as therapists, you are on the side of safety, we hope. Right?
Right.
You are regulated. You are a restorative resource. You're a person of safety. And we can use our presence to help change the balance in that equation.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And so inside, so outside is environmental, between is interpersonal. And then what was the inside again? That's
inside's more that interoception, that somatic sense of, you know, what's happening in my body. Because we do know that dysregulated nervous systems dysregulate digestion. So many of our clients have digestive issues.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. They have breathing problems. These are all nervous system dysregulations that then manifest in a physical symptom. Right. Yeah. So one of the things we do as we're working is to say, you know, a symptom is the nervous system trying to tell us something.
Yes. It's so communication.
What is it trying to tell us?
Yeah.
So that, which helps. And it helps if you can create a team, if you have a, you know, an MD doc, a psychiatrist, a nurse practitioner, the other people in your world who will work with that with you. Right.
Yeah.
Who also believe, yes, the nervous system is trying to communicate something, because then we can create a team and we can all begin to look at that, because the hypothesis is, and a lot of the research is bearing out, that as the nervous system becomes more regulated, the symptoms, whether they're physical or psychological, reduce or even resolve.
Yes. Reduce or resolve from the process of the noticing and the befriending and
regulating. Yep. Doing the whatever it is that helps me have more regulation, find my way back.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, I might dysregulate 100 times a day and it doesn't matter, because 100 times a day I find my way back.
Yes, exactly. Right. Because getting dysregulated is not really what causes like the super intensive trauma symptoms. It's the getting stuck that really causes like, you know, prolonged suffering for people.
Yes. And actually with your, you know, trauma survivor clients, every time the dysregulated come back, that's a win.
Right.
Celebrate that. Nervous system knew just how to get you back here. Yay. Right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It restores that trust in the body that gets kind of, you know, ruptured in trauma too.
And that is something we talk about, complex trauma. You asked, you know, and one thing is, you know, people leave their bodies, right? Because it is the safest experience is to not be in this body where the bad things are happening. So that happens. And, you know, the interesting thing though, I think we want to remember and help our clients remember is that the nervous system is being shaped moment to moment.
Yeah.
So the nervous system that you bring to me today in therapy that is really sensitive to dysregulation and you suffer because you get pulled out, that nervous system can be reshaped, right? You're not stuck with that pattern.
Not set in stone. Wiring,
right? And yeah. I think that's lovely for clients to know. And then it's up to us as clinicians to notice with our clients the tiny changes that are happening.
Yes.
Not wait for the big change, because that's, you know, it could be years down the road and that's okay. But along the way, wow, you didn't go to dorsal and get stuck there for a week. You came back after 2 days. Awesome. Right?
Yeah.
These changes are happening all the time.
Yes. And celebrating those little wins is so important, because I also find with complex trauma, it's so common to, you know, be in that kind of self-shaming place of feeling like I'm not healing fast enough, or feeling the hopelessness of like, it's not getting better. And so, yeah, noticing those little wins can bring so much more kind of hope to the healing process.
I mean, I think the world is a yes, no, all nothing world, but certainly trauma survivors live in an all or nothing world, because gray was always dangerous. The in between was terrifying. So it was, I need to know. Right. And so to help clients understand there's a continuum always.
Yeah.
Right. That it's not that I'm, you know, connected, not connected. I'm connected, a little less connected, a little, you know, there's a continuum of I'm disconnected. And then, oh, I'm moving towards connection.
Yeah.
And it's that continuum that is so beautiful to bring into people's, you know, awareness, both their brain and body experience, because it changes how they see themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're touching on when you're talking about kind of practicing, like noticing the safety cues. Another thing I got from your work is the glimmers, the concept of glimmers, which I love so much. And I use that all the time in my work too. So my understanding of glimmers, right, is that even if we're not able to experience this kind of like total big picture sense of safety, that we all have little moments that kind of connect us with that ventral energy, even if it's just like, I love petting my dog, right? Or I love like how I feel when I listen to music in the car and I'm singing, or there's just these little moments that ground us. And it's like, by turning our attention towards those things, we kind of build that access. Is that how you look at it?
Yeah. I too love glimmers, and it seems like lots of people love glimmers, because I get lots
they're
of email.
So
and I love that. I love that, because they're reachable for
yes.
anybody, right? Even for my most traumatized clients, we could find a glimmer, right? And again, the thing we want to be careful about and really help our clients, you know, understand is that looking for glimmers does not discount or disavow the trauma, right? It's a beautiful experience of both and that your biology is so exquisitely able to do. It can hold all of the unresolved suffering and trauma, and it can help you see a tiny moment of okayness.
Yeah.
And every glimmer, it's not just a one and done thing. You see a glimmer, right? And it comes in somewhere, right? And then another one comes in and they begin to accumulate.
Yeah.
And so it's another way of building the capacity to then, you know, not be dysregulated all the time and to work with the trauma that's stored. Because remember, trauma is stored in your survival states. It's not stored in regulation.
Right.
It's lived there. It lives in your survival state. So we have to figure out, how do we safely enter into those survival states? And glimmers is a way to build that. My clients loved glimmers. They're the ones that really taught me about glimmers, because it was a tiny thing that they could be successful in finding.
Yeah.
You know, and even you know, your biology, when you do something, it feels good to your nervous system says, oh, let's find another.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like they began looking for more, and maybe they found one in the week when they came back. That's awesome. You celebrate it. And maybe the next week they found two. And again, it doesn't matter how many. It matters that you recognize them. You stop, you notice, you appreciate.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, that's the very basic practice. Stop, see, appreciate. You stop. You know, how do you notice that something, you know, okay, is just come into your world. You know, sometimes it's a feeling in the body. Sometimes it's a thought. My clients would say, I don't know. I just thought, oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thought. Beautiful. Stop mm-hmm. and appreciate it. Just spend, you know, 5 seconds going, oh, I like that. And then move on.
Yeah. The practice of slowing down and kind of letting yourself actually like soak that moment up a little bit more. Yep. 'Cause I find with complex trauma, it's like the default is often, you know, for our bodies and brains to just feel gravitated towards those survival states of,
yes.
I mean, my home away from home has always been kind of the like flight energy. Yep. And so I would like have a little moment of a glimmer and then I would just kind of go right back into like anxiously, you
exactly.
know, doing whatever. And so the practice of being like, let me actually sit here and like cuddle with my, you know, my dog is a big one for me. So like, let me sit here and really just like feel this nice moment with my dog or the sun on my skin and let myself actually kind of soak it in for a couple minutes here.
And what's nice about glimmers is, you know, you can work up to a couple of minutes because for many, many trauma survivors, slowing down is terrifying.
Yes, yes,
And
exactly.
so you say, you know, how about 2 seconds?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
it's perfect. It's all you need,
Mm-hmm.
you know, and then it will begin to build, right?
Love
So,
that.
yeah. And I think that's also the beauty of working with polyvagal theory and with the nervous system is that it's so adaptable.
Yes.
Right. You know, whatever that nervous system needs in the moment is what we can help it get. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the question we ask. What does that nervous system need in this moment? That's our guiding principle.
Yeah. Yeah. And every body is different, right? It's like some people, there's different starting points. I mean, you talked about how a lot of people don't feel safe being in their body. And so that's something that I've kind of continued to be on a learning curve with is like, how do you do almost that titration of being able to like slowly help someone reconnect with their senses in a way that's not going to be, you know, flooding and re-traumatizing? And sometimes I've noticed it's starting with really small things. It's like maybe it doesn't feel safe to be taking deep breaths, but you can like smell something and be like, oh, that smells nice. Or there's one sense that you can kind of let yourself enjoy, like, oh, I do like the feeling of heat on my body, on my skin, or something like that.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned breath because, you know, breath practices are so common in the therapy world nowadays. And we also want to remember that breath is an autonomic activity. And so when you begin working with changing your breath, you're working directly with changing your nervous system state,
yeah.
which again, can be incredibly activating and
Yeah.
dysregulating for so many of us, right? And we think we're doing the right thing. And yet you again have to ask the other nervous system, how does it respond to being asked to do, you know, this breath practice?
Yeah.
You know, my nervous system says no thank you most of the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Mine too. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, that's where I learned it. It's like, wow, why is that not working for me? Oh, because it doesn't feel safe, right?
Yeah.
It's a question of does it feel safe to the nervous system?
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
want to offer lots of options, right?
Yes.
There are a gazillion breath practices. You know, is there, you know, blowing bubbles is a breath practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Whistling is a breath practice. There's so many ways to encourage breath practice in a way that doesn't feel like I'm sitting here having to count my breaths or, you know, do something with my inhale or whatever it is. So, yeah.
Or force myself into a level of embodiment that I'm not ready for yet. You know, I remember years and years ago when I was in college, I had a therapist who was lovely, but would try to encourage me to do these different somatic things. And it would just be like a hell no from, you know, she talked once about, have you ever considered dance therapy? And I was like, I literally will never do that ever. I think that's what I told her. I was like, there's no way in hell you're going to make me do that.
Right.
And so it was too much all at once. And so I love how the emphasis here is on starting small and respecting people's boundaries, respecting the needs of their bodies. And it strikes me that even that is probably kind of a trauma healing experience, right? Because it's giving someone empowerment and agency in their body that we lack when we're in trauma, right?
It's honoring the wisdom that's in their nervous system and helping them begin to trust that again. Right. Yeah. I love that you talked about dance movement therapy because you and I are organized in sort of similar ways because I would say the same thing. There's no earthly way I'm going to go do this.
Yeah.
And yet when I watch, I get great satisfaction about watching people move.
Yeah.
And I can imagine it in here. Right. And I get lots of excitement about that. And really my motor cortex probably is doing its thing as I'm imagining, but don't ask me to then enact the movement because I immediately go to dorsal. I just disappear, shut down. Right. And I think we have this belief that there's one way to do it, that unless you're doing it, you're not
getting
any benefit from it. And that's so not true.
Yeah.
You do it in the way your nervous system says, this feels good or this feels nourishing, and you're getting benefit.
Yes. Yes. I had one client, we were doing a practice of just, kind of listening to what does your body want. And she discovered that rolling around on the floor is what feels regulating. And I was like, that is so awesome. Like, I love that. And for me, it's walking. I've always just, I really, really enjoy just like walking and listening to music. And that's kind of the type of movement that I enjoy, or being in water is another one for me. So yeah, I love how individualized it is. It's not like this is the protocol and this is what you do to heal your nervous system.
Right. And we also want to make sure that we all have a menu of choices to reach for, because some days, you know, I want to go walk the basin as a nature preserve. I go walk the basin, and other days it's like, that is like way too much for me. So I need something else. So I can still feel like I'm nourishing my nervous system, but in a different way. So lots of different options, again, is what we're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. So great. What else would you want people to know, you know, people that are listening, in terms of like what they can do, maybe even people that aren't able to access, you know, a therapist that does this kind of work, any other thoughts or suggestions that you have for them?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there are becoming more therapists who are doing this kind of work, but
yes, thankfully.
Still they aren't everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I get this question a lot. And it's hard to find a therapist who, you know, there's no way of knowing. So one thing I will say is, if you're looking for a therapist and you're doing that initial meet and greet, you know, ask your therapist, do you know polyvagal theory, and do you work with the nervous system? It's a great place to start. You know, we're trying to get materials out into the world so that people can sort of play with their own nervous system in a way that's safe enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think some of my work will do that. I have a polyvagal prompts book that just came out that's very gentle and very sort of welcoming for people
to
sort of explore. I'm just finishing a Glimmers journal, which will be fun for people to be able to do that. And I'm working on, it's called the Nervous System Workbook, which is again a general audience, for curious humans, as I like to call them, who can begin to, you know, get to know their nervous system, because your nervous system is driving you around, right?
Yeah.
So let's get to know it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I guess what I would say is, can you find someone to do it with? Because it's much better done with a companion. Maybe not a therapist, it's fine, but is there, you know, do you have a friend who might like to, you know, practice with you or get to know with you? Because again, we long to be in connection and safe connection. It is needed. So yeah, you know, there are lots of, you know, videos and you know, podcasts and all sorts of stuff that people can begin to explore. And I think there's more and more coming out for, you know, just, you know, non-clinical audiences about how do you engage with your nervous system. And I would also caution, you know, because you can go online and you can read some pretty interesting things about how to, you know, how to tone your vagus or hack your nervous system away.
You know,
there's not a lot of research on a lot of these things, which doesn't mean they're not okay, but it means try it out and see what it does for your nervous system.
Yes. Use discernment. Trust your body.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah. I'm excited about those books that you mentioned. And you said another phrase there, actually, that reminds me. So you said safe enough to find a way to engage that safe enough.
Yeah.
And that's a big theme too. So could you?
I used to think, you know, a decade ago or even before the pandemic, we'd talk about finding safety. You know, well, let's create safety so we can do this work. And then the pandemic changed, brought everything you know, into awareness differently, changed everything we should have changed long ago, because it really is safe enough, right? I just need a critical mass of safety. Mm-hmm. There are many days when I don't feel fully, mm-hmm. you know, immersed in ventral and safety, but I'm safe enough to mm-hmm. go through the world feeling organized enough, right, to do what I need to do. That's all we need.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's that continuum, right? Somewhere I reach a tipping point where I move from feeling connected to feeling protected. And when I reach that tipping point, then I'm no longer safe enough. But along the way, there are lots of ways to feel on the connected side.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's fully connected and, you know, I feel connected with you and we're having a lovely conversation, or, you know, I'm living by myself and, you know, I connect with, mine's a cat, with the cat, mm-hmm. or talking to myself, a different way of connecting. And yet yeah. it's okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So safe enough is what we're looking for.
Right. And it's a break from perfectionism, because I think that it gets tricky when people are like, well, what does it mean to be totally safe in a world where, of course, things happen? I mean, we're not, you know, entirely 100,000,000% safe. There's all kinds of things that can be scary, that can be unstable, that can be, you know, alarming. Or, and so, yeah, and the idea of safe enough is accessible.
Yeah. And when we think, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking for what's accessible. What can we feel successful at?
Yeah.
And we talk about safe enough. I mean, there are many places in the world where the environment feels very unsafe, right? And so how do we find some cues of safety in an unsafe environment,
yeah.
right? With many people we work with have had relationships that are unsafe.
Yes.
And how do we find some measure of safety living in a place that feels unsafe with people who feel unsafe? So it's all that. And then you talk about the inside pathway. Talk about everybody who suffers with some kind of chronic disease or chronic pain.
Right, yes.
Where yeah. the body has become the dangerous place. So yeah, there are lots of ways that we feel the danger, and we want to experience, you know, the small cues of safety, so that we can just begin to shift in little ways towards safety and connection.
Yes. I think of this with the attachment framework too, that it's like when we're thinking about a secure attachment, we're not looking for a perfect attachment, because we're humans and, you know, none of us are going to have that. But yeah, we're looking for secure enough and safe enough that we can experience that connectedness.
Yeah. Yeah. We need enough experiences of feeling regulated and safe by the end of the day, so that, you know, maybe that takes up more space in our system than right. the survival strategies. And some days that doesn't happen for us.
Right.
Some days we live more in survival than connection, and that's okay. It's mm-hmm. just, if that becomes the normal part yeah. of your world, then you know you're going to suffer. Right. Yeah. But there are some days for everybody where survival outweighs safety, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then maybe you have another day where, you know, safety and connection outweigh the survival strategies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, nervous system is a dynamic system. It is always moving. It is never stable.
Yes.
Right? So if I'm feeling totally overwhelmed in this moment, right, an hour from now, I may feel like I've found my way back to okayness.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of a dynamic system like
yes,
that.
Yes. 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 Oh, this has been so wonderful. Are there any things that I haven't asked you about that you want to talk about, or anything you feel like we haven't covered yet that's important?
Oh,
I feel like there's, you know, infinite things to talk about.
True. But. Yes. But we've done a lot. But I guess the thing I would like to mention is, if people find themselves in that sympathetic flood of energy where there's chaotic, disorganized energy, we don't want to get rid of that energy. We mm-hmm. want to organize the energy, put it together mm-hmm. in some purposeful way. And mm-hmm. I think that's helpful for people who are feeling all of that, because, you know, the world tells you to calm down.
Yeah. Right?
It's a crazy thing to tell somebody. They would if they could. They've got this flood of energy that we just want to use differently. So maybe we, you know, we move differently. When the movement, the sympathetic movement is disjointed. Mm-hmm. Right. It's and when we begin to find a little rhythm in it, we begin to come back to mm-hmm. a bit of connection. So that's that overwhelm of flood of energy. And then the dorsal no energy, we want to invite people to just look for a tiny bit of energy to come back in.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take time to recover from collapse and work your way back up to connection. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So something tiny, you know, maybe it's a, you know, it's a gentle touch, or, you know, you push the button to hear the music, or you look out the window, or your pet comes and sits with you. That's the gentle return of energy. It's a quiet return. So we want to, and we want to respect both of those.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, partner with the nervous system rather than working against it. And I think we have a better shot at coming to ventral and feeling the ease that comes there.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's kind of like what I was saying earlier about people thinking that we're just supposed to use somatic tools to immediately correct or counter our experiences. And what you're talking about is more of like a learning how to flow with it. Or sometimes I think about like moving through it, like what does that flight energy need? Right. And I know some people experience like cathartic release instead of trying to just counter. So like it feels good to like go on a run, or it feels good to like use your voice, you know, to let energy out. So there are those kind of the things you're talking about with like organizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the question to ask after you've tried something, right, is, did this help me move towards ventral? And if it did, great. It was a resource that worked. If it didn't, we're going to let go of that thing. We're not going to do that again. And we'll try something different. Right. Yeah. So that's really the test. Did it help me move towards ventral? And then that's your nervous system is saying yes to that. And I guess I'd also say, if your nervous system says no, clearly respect that.
Yes.
Right. Like your nervous system said, no way am I going to dance. Not just respect it. And other people need to respect that that is what your nervous system is saying. So, you know, that's really so important, because trauma survivors have been told not to listen, been told what's happening is not really happening. Don't believe what you see. And so that respecting what their nervous system is telling them is important. And maybe we'll, you know, we'll work with that later. But I told my clients, if your nervous system is saying absolutely no, just go with that for the moment. We can figure it out later. But in this moment, you're getting a clear message.
Honor that. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'll, should I just include your website if people want to check out your books and other work that you're doing right now? And Thank you so much for your time. This has been so wonderful.
It's been a lovely journey with you. Thank you.
Yes.